Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My intention is to inspire, empower, and enable you to live vegan, joyfully, healthfully, and deliciously. Today's episode is plant-based options at fast food restaurants not suitable for vegans. Before we begin, my name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and on social media. You can find my books wherever books are sold. And you can join me in my online vegan cooking classes or in my vegan trips around the world at joyfulvegan.com. This podcast, Food for Thought, is listener supported. So if it's something you value and get something out of and you'd like to enjoy some perks, just head over to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. You can find the link also at joyfulvegan.com and become a supporter today at your chosen level. And thank you so much for leaving ratings and reviews. It all really makes a difference. Thanks for listening and thanks for subscribing. If you would like to experience the best of vegan travel, the best travel honestly. Our Rwanda November 2022 trip has a few spots left, so don't hesitate to book this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Mountain gorillas, chimpanzees, some of the most beautiful places you will ever stay, ever, period. And the same with our Tuscany June 2022 trip, both in 2022, one's in November, one's in June. I would love you to join me. We have a few rooms left in Tuscany, and all of the information about the trips, beautiful photos, detailed itineraries, and the cost are at joyfulvegantrips.com. Hi, everybody. I hope you're doing fabulously well. 30 years. That's about how long it's been since I bought KFC. Prior to my becoming vegetarian, which was in 1990, I definitely ate my share of buckets and boxes and bags of chicken's breasts and chests and wings and thighs, boneless, skinless, battered and fried. Who knew it had ever been a walking, clucking bird to begin with? Actually, of course I knew, because we called it chicken, called it fried chicken. So of course I knew, but you will have to listen to a previous podcast episode or several in which I argued that we take the animal out of the animal or the chicken out of the chicken when we use the singular descriptive chicken. For example, if you asked me if I had ate chicken or if you asked me when I was eating chicken, if I ate chicken, I would have said, absolutely, I eat chicken. I love chicken. But if you asked me if I ate chickens, I would have been quite taken aback. Right? Do you eat chickens? What? No, I don't eat chickens. I eat chicken. Right? We've been using the singular chicken for so long to refer to the lifeless, inanimate bit on our plates that we don't see that anymore. We don't see a live chicken. But of course, I technically knew I was eating chickens. However, there are so many ways we put our heads in the sand when it comes to eating animals. And it's very easy to hide that very obvious fact, even from yourself, even while you're eating them, even while you're naming it, even while you're saying chicken legs or a turkey sandwich, even then, it's so easy to put your head in the sand, right? However, the parts that starkly reminded me that I was eating chickens were the legs. Chicken legs, chicken's legs. The muscles were just too muscly, too sinewy, too elastic, right? I couldn't close my eyes tightly enough and pretend I wasn't chewing on muscle. Wings, the same thing, because you could detect the outline of a wing and sometimes catch a bone. But don't get me wrong, it did not put me off eating KFC or Burger King or McDonald's or Pizza Hut or White Castle or any other fast food joint I grew up eating at and whose food I ate. I participated in their contest. I remember wanting to win coupons for free food. They had all these games all the time, these contests, these giveaways, right? I bought the Happy Meals to get the games and the toys. I mean, I asked my parents to get the Happy Meals for me and to get this stuff for me. But I was hooked just as they were hooked. They brought me. I wanted to be brought. I went to birthday parties there. I had birthday parties at these places, right? The marketing tactics these places use are brilliant, especially to bring children in, and the money they spend to hook you is well spent, right? They have characters that became household names. I don't know, Hamburglar and Ronald McDonald. I don't even know who they are these days. I'm sure there are many. Not going to lie, though, I do suffer from calorophobia. Is that what it's called? Calorophobia. I hate clowns. So that weird clown did not appeal to me. Yeah, calorophobia is like a thing, like people who are afraid of clowns. I'm terrified of clowns. Okay, I'm not terrified, but I hate clowns. I hate clowns. They're the most terrifying thing. Next to puppets and dolls, clowns. But these places had playgrounds and characters and color. And, you know, what kid is going to resist that, right? And then the food. It's pretty fatty and salty and therefore delicious. That's what we seek out when we're looking for satisfaction when we're eating fat and salt and flavor, right? And of course, these fast food places, they just specialize in that. So I ate cheeseburgers at Burger King and chicken nuggets at McDonald's. I can still taste them. I can still remember what they tasted like. Fried fish at White Castle. I know some people don't know White Castle. I grew up in it's funny too, because people who, all of us grew up eating fast food restaurants. Most of us, okay, I'll say the majority of us. And yet still, we have this snobbery. Like there's some fast food joints that we deem inferior to others. And White Castle is definitely one of those. I grew up eating White Castle. My mother grew up, she worked in White Castle. Her mother worked in White Castle. Like, those are my people. Like, that's where I come from. So White Castle was a thing in our house. It was a big thing. And I believe that my sister still buys White Castle like on Friday nights. I don't know. I've heard this rumor. And that my father, like, she'll get White Castle for him as well. So like, White Castle is still a thing in my family, not in my life in many, many years, but it's a thing. So I grew up eating, but I would get the fish. I didn't get the burgers. I didn't like the burgers. I loved the fries and I loved the shakes, but I didn't get the burgers. I got the fish. Cause again, there was this line. It was like, ooh, that's a little too like, it's too much like reminding me of meat. But the fish was like this white fish, you know, fried in batter. And I was like, yes, that's what I got at White Castle. But beef tacos at, you know, Taco Bell, double cheese pizza, probably with meat on it at Pizza Hut, and buckets of chickens at KFC. And of course, all manner of chocolate shakes and soft serve ice cream. Oh my God, Dairy Queen. Like, we grew up really close to a Dairy Queen. And my father ran ice cream stores as part of the Breyers franchise and the Baskin Robbins franchise, and eventually opened his own ice cream place called 30 Love. It did not last long, referring to tennis, like 30 Love. It had a whole tennis theme. And of course, he sold lots of ice cream there, as well as hot dogs. Of course, there were hot dog places too. Stewart's was a place I loved because it was like this old-fashioned kind of 50s place. And I grew up in the 70s, but it was this kind of 50s theme where people would come out and actually put the trays on the window of your car and you could get hot dogs and the fries. I remember the fries, but I remember those hot dogs, those gristly, greasy, fatty hot dogs. That's what I grew up on. And I loved animals. Okay. I was an animal lover. Most of us are. Most of us love animals. And most of us are conditioned not to see the animal in the meat or the suffering in that happy meal. I, like the majority of people, ate animals because that's what I was taught. But when the memory of, or the resemblance of that living animal, the resemblance to that living animal got a little too close, like in the case of the chicken's wings or the chicken's legs, time to change. Not my behavior. No, not my behavior. I didn't change my behavior a little bit, tweaked it, but I changed my thinking about my behavior, right? I talk about this in my book, The Joyful Vegan, that most compassionate people feel discomfort knowing that they're causing harm. That awareness quite literally butts up against our perception that we're good and that we're compassionate and that we would never hurt animals and that we would never hurt anyone, right? So we have this awareness that we know somewhere they're suffering, that animals have to die in order to become meat. And we know that they suffer for doing so, but we also believe ourselves to be good people. And so there's this tension, there's this conflict, there's this discord, there's this dissonance when we struggle to reconcile our compassion with our habitual taste and preference for animal-based meat, milk, eggs, cheese, etc., right? It's incredibly difficult to hold both beliefs at the same time, that animals feel pain and suffer when, you know, they're killed, right, or being confined, and that we're causing them to suffer. That is really painful. And so to cope with that pain, we have to look away. We have to live in ignorance. We have to defy our own conscience. We have to choose willful blindness in order to partake in something that goes against some of our most intrinsic values. We have to, in order to continue supporting something that is anathema to our very ethics. And so we choose willful blindness. And so we change our behavior, not so much, but we change our thinking about our behavior. And so I talk about the fact that we change our thinking about our behavior. We say, this is necessary. This is good. They are here for us. We change our thinking about them. Oh, they don't feel the same kind of pain as we do. You know, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, to make myself feel a little better, I didn't stop eating chickens. I just ate their breasts instead of their legs or their wings, right? And so I did this for years. We have all these like, oh, I can't eat that, but I will eat this, right? All these little, you know, kind of deals we make with ourselves. And I did this for years into my own adulthood. I did grow up eating meat, dairy, and eggs. That's what I was taught. But I developed my own taste and my own habits and my own desire for it. And that had been established when I was a child, right? And it's established for most of us when we're children. But by the time I was a young adult, I honed it. In fact, I honed that habit so much that I nearly didn't graduate high school because of it. So when I was 16 years old, I was forced, and I won't get into the details, but I was forced to move to Livingston, New Jersey, from Summit, New Jersey, to live with my father. I had been living with my mother, and I was forced to go to Livingston to live with my father. Switching schools in my junior year of high school was not what I wanted. It was a really difficult time. I was not happy. And as you can imagine, it was really hard to adjust to a new school, to meet new friends, your junior year in high school. So for those who are in other countries, that means, well, 11th grade. We have 12 grades in the United States. So the 11th grade, and we graduate after the 12th grade. So it was just 2 years before I was finishing school. And one of the things that was really frustrating was dealing with the different requirements for graduation, right? So classes and credits I had taken while I was in school in Summit weren't recognized in Livingston. I can't remember all the details, but by the time I was a senior in high school in Livingston, I hadn't yet taken basic algebra. I'm sure I was just procrastinating because I don't like math. And it was a class I was required to take to graduate. And because it's a subject that most students take in their first year in high school when they're freshmen, I was the only senior in a class full of freshmen. So I was really humiliated and really bored mostly. And math has not ever been a favorite subject of mine. And so I didn't make much effort in class. I knew enough to get by. I was doing just that. I was just getting by. I was passing my tests and I was keeping my head down. And the teacher liked me probably for that because I was a senior, you know, I was respectful to him compared with the young snotty freshman. And I was just quiet and, you know, I mean, I wasn't generally quiet, just to be clear, but I was respectful to him. And I didn't really exert much effort in class, but he liked me. I was smart, you know, and he just liked me. But I wanted to just get out of this place. Couldn't stand it. Couldn't stand Livingston High School and just couldn't stand it. And I just applied myself very little to keep my head down and just to get the heck out of here. Now, as a senior, I also had a driver's license and a car, a Nova. I had a blue Nova, Chevy Nova. And this class was early in the morning. It may have been my first class after homeroom. Remember homeroom? It was like a required period where like you were counted as present, but you were kind of left on your own until your first class, especially as a senior. Like, you know, just go to your classes, get it done, do well, you know, move on. And Livingston was a pretty academically competitive school. So there were a lot of expectations, but I didn't fulfill them. So if I remember this correctly, I would check in for homeroom and then I would cut out and go to McDonald's, go to the drive-in on Route 10 in Livingston. And I would order my favorite thing in the world, which was a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. I don't even know if they have them anymore, but it was bread, biscuit, buttery, fat, egg, bacon, salty, loved it. Right? What's not to love? I would crave it. And it became a regular thing. I would go to homeroom and then I would cut out and I would go get my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. And on one Thursday, I cut class altogether after getting my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. And then Friday, I did the same thing. And then Monday, I did the same thing. And I remember that Monday because I was going to be late for class. And I thought, well, I'm going to be late, so forget it. I'm just not going to go. Stupidly, I just didn't go. And so I cut class again. And on Tuesday, when I showed up in class, my teacher very regretfully told me that I had to go to the vice principal's office. Now, the vice principal was always the one in charge of discipline. And I really do remember how nice he was about it. Like, he was apologizing to me that he reported me because he really did like me. But whereas he had looked the other way when I had cut class, like now and again, this time, because I was absent 3 days in a row, he didn't know if I was coming back. And so he had to report my absence. And three cuts, Thursday, Friday, Monday, is an automatic failure of that class. And if I didn't pass that class, I couldn't graduate high school, all because of a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit from McDonald's. So the vice, okay, obviously it was my fault, but bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. So the vice principal did not like me. I don't even know why. He didn't even know me. And I was only in this school for like a year and a half at that time. And he was unmoved by any and all attempts to persuade him to be lenient with me. Three cuts, automatic failure. Nope. You have failed that class. That class is a requirement. So not only can you not graduate, you will have to repeat your senior year. And that was that. So as you can imagine, I was not happy. And in the end, my father intervened, which my father intervened at times when he just shouldn't have, because, you know, there were plenty of times where I made mistakes and I needed to live with the consequences of those mistakes. But this was one of those times where I was really grateful that he intervened. And so did some other teachers who liked me, and they lobbied on my behalf. And my punishment was reduced to not being allowed to graduate with my class, but not having to repeat senior year, just having to take that basic algebra class that summer after everyone else in my class graduated, and then get my diploma once I passed that summer school class. And so I did. I never got to walk graduation with the rest of my fellow seniors. My parents didn't get to see me walk at graduation, and I passed the class and I graduated high school by the skin of my teeth. And I blame McDonald's. I blame that bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. So fast forward a couple years later, when I read Diet for a New America, my eyes were opened. Never had another bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. I put all those little body parts together, those little wings and those legs and those breasts, and I saw the whole animal, the living animal, the feeling animal, and I stopped eating animals. But my compassion was still conditional. You've heard me talk about before. My eyes were still slightly closed because I continued to eat animal fluids and ferments, right? Milk, cheese, eggs, as well as aquatic animals. I hadn't stopped eating animals that came out of the sea. And so, yet, I had made a huge change, a change that would put me at odds with my family, cause tension, spark arguments, put me on the defensive, but still I persevered and I stayed vegetarian and eventually became vegan, which is an entirely different thing, right? It is, trust me, if you want to know why, I talk about it in previous podcast episodes and in my books, but it is an entirely different thing. When I first became vegetarian, I was stunned and sickened by what I had learned about animal agriculture and factory farming, and I definitely had a visceral reaction to it. But it's not like when you become vegan. That's like stepping out into the hot sun with no clothes and no sunscreen and no sunglasses and no hat. You're just completely naked and completely raw. And in a good way, though. Don't take that in a bad way. Like, you're just like beginning life and consciousness all over again. But when I was vegetarian, because I still had a foot in it, right? I still had a foot in animal agriculture. I was still eating other animal products. So I was disgusted, but I, you know, it's not as visceral. Because I remember being disgusted by the sight and smell of meat, especially fast food, so much so that when David and I were first dating, this is back in 1995, he would come over to my apartment, we would kiss hello, and I could smell on him that he had just or recently just eaten fast food. I could smell the fat. I could smell the grease. I could still smell it in my mind's eye and my mind's nose. I can still smell it. I can remember what it smelled like. And I would make him eat Tic Tacs. He always had Tic Tacs. He hasn't had Tic Tacs in like, I don't know, 20 years. But when we were first dating, he always had Tic Tacs. So I would make him have Tic Tacs before I would kiss him again. Because I could smell it. Because he would go to Wendy's and he would get, you know, whatever they sold at Wendy's. I don't know. I didn't grow up eating Wendy's. I grew up eating White Castle. In fact, by the time I met David, I had never been to a Wendy's. And he's one of the people who, like, he would go to Wendy's and they would go to wherever, whatever, growing up. But he puts his nose up at the fact that I ate at White Castle. I'm like, you were eating at Wendy's. Like, they're all the same. It's all gross. It's all, there's no difference. But I had never had Wendy's. And he would rave about Wendy's chocolate shake and fries. And so I went with him to try them. And they were amazing. Like, I really do remember they were so good. We didn't go there like a lot. Like, we didn't go there on dates, but we went to Wendy's together. We were young. And he would get some gross, whatever meat thing, and I would get fries and I would get a shake. And I don't really remember having a lot of compunction eating at a fast food place as a vegetarian. I was mainly happy that I could go with him and I could get something vegetarian and delicious at a fast food restaurant. If Wendy's had had like a vegetarian burger, like a veggie burger, I'm 100% sure I would have gotten it. A little veggie burger with fries, 100% sure. But that was the mid-90s and there was no such thing. Not there, not at that time. But there were vegetarian options at fast food joints. Obviously fries would be one of them. And I was really grateful for them. So when we drove across the country in 1998 from Route 80 in New Jersey to Route 80 in our new Bay Area home in Oakland, we really just drove across 80 the entire way. Route 80 is still very close to me right here in Oakland. We drove across the country with our cats, Simon and Schuster, in only 4 days, stopping along the way, of course, at various fast food restaurants to fill up our hungry bellies. And it was at Arby's in, I believe, Wyoming, that David had his last piece of animal flesh. And it's actually funny, I remember this so well. I remember stopping at this big, like, you know, strip mall on the side of the road, right? David chose Arby's to go get food, and I chose Taco Bell because it had vegetarian refried bean tacos. And I remember sitting on the curb next to the car. We couldn't go inside to eat anywhere because the cats were in the car. And so I sat, you know, on the curb. I ate my refried bean tacos. I was quite happy with them. I remember them being actually quite tasty. I love refried beans. And I was kind of like rubbing it in David's face that mine were so delicious and his barbecue roast beef sandwich or whatever he got looked gross. What I can't remember as if he knew that this would be his last bit of animal flesh. I have to think not. I have to think that he would have chosen something else, something better than his than Arby's as his last carnivorous meal. But it was Arby's on Route 80 in a strip mall in Wyoming in the beginning of July of 1998. The next year, I would become vegan, and David would follow 6 or 8 months later. The blinders were completely ripped off. They're completely ripped off when you become vegan. There's no hiding. There's no pretending. A leg is a wing, is a breast, is a thigh, is a bird, is a chicken who fights to live. That's it. And once you fully wake up, that's all you see when you look at a bucket of KFC or even drive past one or a McDonald's or a Burger King. That's all you see. All you see is pain and suffering, right? Now, I talk about this shift in perception in The Joyful Vegan, the book I wrote to identify and describe this shift and all the stages we go through once we're awake. And spoiler alert, one of the stages is where we say, how can I not have known? And another is, how could I have been part of it? We literally start dealing with the remorse that comes with looking back on the harm we caused, and we feel terrible for having done so. How could I have been part of that? And I think one of the ways we cope with this guilt and this remorse, it's really remorse, I talk about the difference in that chapter, is to almost purposefully forget, or at least gloss over the fact that we ate meat, dairy, and eggs and actually liked it. We forget that we had no compunction about eating at fast food restaurants or from any restaurant, you know, where we bought animal bits and bobs. Like, we just forget. We kind of gloss over that. And it becomes easier and easier to forget this the longer and further away from it we are, the longer we're vegan. But remembering it is so important for two reasons, probably for more than two reasons, but two that I'll name. Number one, it forces us to acknowledge that we're not bad people, that we were uninformed, that we were unaware, that we were conditioned, and to forgive ourselves for that unwitting harm that we unintentionally caused, right? So we face that when we remember that, we go, I wasn't a bad person, I just didn't know, right? And number two, because in remembering that we once weighed ate animals and weren't bad people and forgive ourselves for having contributed to animal suffering, it means we're also much more compassionate when we see so many people eating animals and contributing to their suffering. As I write in The Joyful Vegan, if we can't tolerate our own human imperfections, we risk being intolerant of everyone else's too. That's why it's so important that we remember our story. We need to remember that we too once ate animals and that we too are fallible and vulnerable humans. If we remember that we did the best we could with what we knew at the time, then we'll better able to understand when someone else is doing the same thing. If we can move through our own remorse to self-forgiveness, it means we're more likely to be compassionate toward others. I mean, that's literally the definition of compassion, is seeing yourself in others and seeing others in yourself. I am no different than anyone else who was persuaded to, conditioned to, habituated to eating meat, dairy, and eggs. And I'm no better than anyone else now that I no longer eat meat, dairy, and eggs. I am better than who I was. I wouldn't cut class to go to McDonald's. I'm better than that. I make better choices today, right? And I've made it a conscious point. I've made it a part of my story, to tell my story. I've been very conscious about this, to remember that I am just like everyone else in that I chose willful blindness in response to my cognitive dissonance, and that everyone else is like me in that they have the potential to make different and better choices. I tell my story about McDonald's because I have to, if I want to remain vegan and if I want to remain a joyful vegan. I was just like the millions of people who still frequent fast food joints out of necessity, out of convenience, out of pleasure, out of want, out of desire, out of habit, out of addiction, out of desperation, out of boredom, to cut class, for any number of reasons, millions of people frequent these places. And yes, billions of animals are killed as a result. And when I first started advocating for those billions of animals and helping people become vegan, whether I was showing slaughter videos and handing out Why Vegan booklets on the streets of Berkeley, or tabling and teaching vegan cooking classes at the Unitarian Church in Oakland in 1999, 2000, 2001, everyone, young or old, poor or affluent, black or white, unhoused, home-owning, apartment-renting, student, professional, everyone up and down and in between, everyone asked about what they'd be able to eat on the road, in restaurants, in fast food drive-thrus. Everyone wanted to know what they'd be able to get when they brought their kids or went with their friends after school to McDonald's if they weren't eating meat, dairy, and eggs. And I was thrilled to be able to give them the list of fast food places that had vegan options. And these were the early days for me. People have been vegan a lot longer than me, and veganism has been around a lot longer than I have. But this was 1999 and 2000, 2001, 2002. There wasn't a lot on those menus. But as an advocate for them and for the animals, I would track down everything I could to tell them about Taco Bell and their refried beans not made with lard, with animal fat. About Wendy's and their fries, about getting a Subway sandwich and asking them to hold the meat and just pile on the veggies. All options. Not amazing options, but options, right? Not amazing, not then. But you're thrilled to be able to tell people they have options. No, you can still go. No. Here's what you can get. You're thrilled that even for you, with limited options, you can cobble something together and be proud of how resourceful you are. And I was able to share this with people I was advocating to because I was in the same boat. There were times when I was in an airport, small town, or early on when I was vegetarian and working as a part-time nanny and having to bring the kids I was watching to fast food restaurants because of birthday parties and because that's where they wanted to go. And they weren't my kids, and it wasn't my choice. And they wanted to go, and the parents wanted me to take them. They knew I was vegetarian, and to be honest, it did cause some friction because they knew I despised the fast food restaurants and all the suffering they created. But at least I was able to find a few things to eat. I would try to persuade the kids to eat them as well, but they weren't interested. They wanted to get the hamburger they wanted. They wanted to get the chicken, whatever it was. And that's where it caused friction, because the more I would want them to eat the vegan or vegetarian at the time option, the more they would dig in their heels and be like, no, I want this familiar thing. I want this thing that I already know. That's why I'm going. I'm going because I want this thing, right? Or when I was in college and with friends who wanted to go to McDonald's late at night or diners in New Jersey where the food was just as good as fast food restaurants, to be honest, or when David and I were on road trips, right? I wanted to have options when I was vegetarian in the early days and then later vegan to eat, you know, in a situation like this, to eat among people eating animals, even though I wasn't eating animals. And like once you're vegan, especially once you're vegan, when you're vegetarian too, you become like a black belt, knowing what to ask for in these places and knowing what to avoid. Hey, Subway sandwich maker, I'm going to have a sub sandwich, but I want a vegetarian sandwich, no meat. So can I just tell you all the vegetables I want and you just put it on the thing? Great. Also, I'm vegan, so could you use oil and vinegar instead of mayonnaise and whatever? Sure. Great. Thank you so much. Hey, Taco Bell person, can I have 2 soft tacos with refried beans? They're not made with lard, right? Awesome. I didn't think so. Great. Could you not put on the sour cream and not put on the cheese, but could you add some lettuce and tomatoes? Perfect. You get the idea. Now, I'm giving examples of places that had and have vegetarian and vegan options, but not in the sense of having vegan meat patties or vegan chicken nuggets. Subway and Taco Bell always had a vegetarian option, right? Vegetables and animal-free refried beans, respectively. But the question is, how many non-vegans would choose these items? How many non-vegans, non-vegetarians would go to Subway and cobble together a vegan sub and do what I did and do what I do? Not many. Now, I was desperate enough or savvy enough or hungry enough to find what I needed by asking them to add or eliminate things. But most people don't even think you could modify what's already offered on the menu, and they're not going to go through the trouble to do so. It's called fast food, convenience food for a reason. And the fast food restaurants that offered things that enabled me to cobble all of this together, it was really more by accident than by design. They weren't solving for me. They weren't solving for vegetarians. They weren't solving for vegans. They weren't solving even for the general public to have healthier options. There were beans at Taco Bell because they feature Mexican cuisine. There was lettuce and peppers and pickles at Subway because that's what people put on their meat sandwiches. They weren't solving for health and certainly not for ethics. But times are changing. And some of them are starting to look at and have started to look at ways to offer healthier options. And over the decades, there's been a lot of research about what restaurants and fast food places can and should do to encourage people to choose healthier options. And of course, to us, that means plant-based options. And I talk about some of that research in The Joyful Vegan. And one of the biggest takeaways is that the word healthy should never appear in the title of or description of a food item on a restaurant menu if they want it to sell. And of course, don't label it vegetarian and never vegan. Here is an excerpt from The Joyful Vegan. As much as people profess to want to eat healthfully, right, again, self-perception versus reality, they're less inclined to order something if it's labeled healthy. If it's labeled healthy, low fat, no oil, low calorie, they equate these descriptors with no flavor and no satisfaction. Instead, the recommendation for restaurants would be to use descriptors like indulgent, decadent, we're talking about desserts, right? Sinful, rich, luxurious. And the next research finding, don't label the item as vegetarian or vegan. For example, title a plant-based burger, Impossible Burger, or Beyond Burger, rather than Vegan Burger or Veggie Burger. If it's not a commercial patty, call it something exciting like Smoky Grilled Grain Burger or Mexican Bean Chipotle Burger. Only indicate that the item is plant-based in the description. Made with delectable plant-based ingredients for the discerning meat eater, for example. Now, I'm telling you this, aware that the majority of you listening may not work at restaurants or fast food restaurants or have a franchise or own a restaurant, but I think it's helpful to know these guidelines for a few reasons. Two reasons. It's probably more, but I'll give you two. A, it's helpful to know what to talk to your local restaurants about and how to encourage them to include more plant-based options on their menus, who may resist putting vegan options on their menu or even resist calling what they have already have vegan, like because there's something around like, you know, put a little V or have a little key, like make it, put it there, but just don't make it prominent, so prominent that it's going to be called vegan, but you can put a V. So it's helpful to be able to talk to them about it, about what works. And it helps you understand when managers say, yeah, we had vegan options on the menu, but nobody ordered them. It's probably because they called them vegan burger or whatever it was. I'm using burgers, but like anything, they will often call it vegan something, or they have a separate vegan menu, which is also a no-no in terms of what the research shows actually sells. And the research shows that non-vegans, who are the majority of the population, are less inclined to order something called a vegan burger. They're not going to ask for the vegan menu. And as for vegans who, you know, lament that we just want our own menu and it's really nice when we walk into a place and we can see something very clearly labeled vegan, we deserve a break, we're always having to, you know, be second class citizens. Yeah, it's nice. But we ask anyway. Even if a burger were called Beyond Burger, obviously we know the patty is vegan, or smoky black bean burger and has a little V next to it, every vegan's going to ask more questions to make sure it's suitable for them. So I'd rather the majority were solved for, not me, who's going to advocate for myself, whatever the menu item says. Remember, we're black belts, right? The other reason I think it's helpful to understand what works in terms of how food is marketed is so that you can implement these strategies when talking to non-vegans and making non-animal-based food seem as familiar and attractive and not weird as possible. For me, that's the key. Right? And you can find more findings from these kinds of studies in The Joyful Vegan. So back to my point, that non-vegans are not going to jump through hoops to make a healthier option the way vegans would do. The easier and more affordable it can be for them to choose the healthiest vegetarian vegan option, the better. And if fast food restaurants think it's going to work because their business model requires them to make money, then they're going to do what works. But only if it's good, and only if it works. And it's not just research fast food companies are looking at in terms of making the decisions they do about what they serve and how they market it and what they call it. It's also history and experience. In a 2013 article in The Atlantic called How Junk Food Can End Obesity, yes, it's a provocative title, go read the article, author David Friedman tells the story of the McLean Deluxe and how it reigns as McDonald's worst product failure of all time. Now, keep in mind, the McLean Deluxe is not healthy by any standards that I would think or you would think, right? It's not plant-based, but they thought it was a healthy alternative. And no doubt at all, that story informs the decision of all fast food companies, even today, when they consider offering healthier fare or ideally plant-based options. So here's an excerpt from the article. There are two words that surely strike fear into the hearts of all fast food executives who hope to make their companies fare healthier. McLean Deluxe. Among those who gleefully rank such things, the McLean Deluxe reigns, as I said, as McDonald's worst product failure of all time. When I brought up the McLean Deluxe to the innovation team at McDonald's, I faced the first and only uncomfortable silence of the day. Finally, Greg Watson, a senior vice president, cleared his throat and told me that neither he nor anyone else in the room was at the company at the time, and he didn't know much about it. It sounds to me, though, like it was ahead of its time, he said. If we had something like that in the future, we would never launch it like that again. It was introduced in 1991, the McLean Deluxe, and it was perhaps the boldest single effort the food industry has ever taken to shift the masses to healthier eating. It was supposed to be a healthier version of the Quarter Pounder made with extra lean beef infused with seaweed extract. It reportedly did reasonably well in early taste tests, and McDonald's pumped the reduced fat angle to the public for all it was worth. The general reaction varied from lack of interest to mockery, to revulsion. The company gamely flogged the sandwich for 5 years before quietly removing it from the menu. The McLean Deluxe was a sharp lesson to the industry, even if in some ways it merely confirmed what generations of parents have well known. If you want to turn off otherwise eager eaters to a dish, tell them it's good for them. Recent studies suggest that the less health conscious might use information about a product having a healthier nutritional profile, lower calories, to steer clear of it, perhaps assuming that it tastes worse and is less satisfying and that it's worse value for their money. The result is a sense in the food industry that if it's going to sell healthier versions of its foods to the general public and not just to the minority already sold on healthier eating, it's going to have to do it in a relatively sneaky way, emphasizing the taste appeal and not the health benefits. People expect something to taste worse if they believe it's healthy, says Charles Spence, an Oxford University neuroscientist who specializes in how the brain perceives food, and that expectation affects how it tastes to them. So it actually does taste worse. And yet, here we are in 2022. Despite that cautionary tale, a number of fast food restaurants are embracing, not just training their employees to allow customers to leave off meat from their Subway sandwiches. I mean, yay, I paid the same price for what was essentially a lettuce sub, right? Or they're not just allowing, let's not cook our refried beans in lard, right? They're actually embracing market-tested commercial plant-based meats and cheeses and adding them to their menus. Now, I like being a black belt and all, but I much prefer being able to enter a Chipotle, for instance, and just order their sofritas. And I have, right? Their sofritas are made with spicy braised tofu, made by Oakland, woohoo, tofu maker Hodo, one of the best tofu. They're just the best. They make everything they do is amazing. Their yuba, their tofu, their everything. Soy milk. They're hugely popular, these sofritas, hugely popular, and not just with vegans, but with the general population. In other words, whereas, as I believe, non-vegans are not going to go to the trouble to customize a bunch of things on the menu, and they're certainly not going to not feel like a pain in the butt doing so, and they're not really going to be that satisfied, they will order a delicious menu item that's familiar, sofritas, and delicious. It's on the menu. They just name it, it's fast, it's convenient, it's cheap. The same goes for the Impossible Whopper at Burger King. You know, vegans can just ask for no mayo. Or the Beyond Famous Star at Carl's Jr., right? Vegans can just ask for no mayo and no dairy cheese. Or the Epic Beyond Fresh Guacamole Burrito at Del Taco, which uses Beyond Beef Crumbles. I mean, Pizza Hut, they still don't have a non-dairy cheese, they will. Right? But they do have Beyond Meat Italian sausage crumbles. A&W in Canada has an entire line of plant-based offerings, including Beyond Meat burger patties, Beyond Meat sausage patties, plant-based nuggets. Vegans can just get the, you know, hamburger bun or the sesame bun or the English muffin, none of which are made with dairy or eggs. Tim Hortons, a Canadian chain, you can get a multitude of vegan offerings, including Beyond Meat breakfast sandwiches. And White Friggin' Castle? White Castle! The lowest of the low. They have vegan sliders made with the Impossible Burger. Vegans can ask for them, you know, with plain without the non-vegan sauce or with a sweet Thai sauce or just, and tell them to hold the cheese, right? Like, are you kidding me? That's amazing. That's fantastic for the animals. It's fantastic for the animals. It's fantastic for the animals. And it's fantastic for the general population who are ordering plant-based versions of their favorite familiar menu items and not having to cobble something together. Because I'll tell you right now, if those options were not available, they would not customize their order to make it vegetarian or vegan. They just wouldn't. Period. Full stop. And you can see how savvy the fast food industry has become in terms of what they're naming these items. You can hear it. It's not a vegan burger or a healthy burger. It's a Beyond Burger. It's an Impossible Nuggets, right? And I have a feeling that when they partner with these companies like Impossible and Beyond, they are contractually obligated to use their trademarked name in the menu, which is brilliant, right? It's not vegan burger. It's the Beyond Meat sausage patty, etc. Which is great because it works. People are buying them and more fast food restaurants are watching the other ones and they're adding them, right? Including fast food restaurants like KFC, who I have not bought from in 30 years, and who in early 2022 rolled out their new plant-based chicken, Beyond Fried Chicken. They had first tested it in select locations, and after a successful trial run where it sold out in all of these locations, they launched it nationwide. They're still testing it, and they're calling it available for a limited time because that's what companies do when they launch new items. They test them, they see what works, they see what needs to be tweaked, they tweak what needs to be improved. And if all goes well, they make them permanent. And that's all we can hope for. And so far, so good. They're selling really well. And in fact, so are many of the plant-based options at all the fast food restaurants that offer them, everything I just named and more. And I'm just talking about fast food. I'm not even talking about just restaurants, right? And it's not because of vegans. It's because of the general population, which is not vegan, right? And it's funny because I often hear vegans take credit for the rise in vegan products and in vegan food options at fast food restaurants, but I also mostly hear vegans say they would never go to these places. So why would you think a company would actually create, market test, sell, put any marketing money into a product they think the people they're making it for wouldn't buy it? They're not making it for vegans. They don't care. I don't care, right? I mean, vegans are rejecting these things anyway, but they seem to think it's for vegans. It's not for vegans, and it doesn't matter. I mean, vegans can eat it. Like, it's there. It's called options. It's choices, right? In a 2019 article called "Who's Eating Meatless Fast Food Burgers? Not Vegans," goes like this. A new report from market research firm NPD Group finds 95% of plant-based burger buyers have also purchased a beef burger within the past year. It's not the committed vegetarians or vegans who are buying the meatless burgers, the report concludes, but so-called flexitarians, people who are trying to reduce their meat consumption but not rule it out entirely. This makes sense once you think about it. Established vegans may not need a food replicating the flavor and texture of a beef burger, but for avowed carnivores, a burger like Impossible or Beyond certainly makes plant-based eating much more palatable. Although vegetarians and vegans are certainly contributing to the growth in plant-based, they still represent a small single digits percentage of the U.S. population and aren't the primary contributors, NPD notes. Fast food chains, no doubt, needed to have carnivores buy in. Meat eaters' appetite for meatless burgers helped push sales up 10% for the 12-month period ending May 2019 versus a prior year. Beef burger growth, meanwhile, remained flat. That data indicates that's because carnivores are making a trade-off, at least sometimes. For every 18 fast food beef burgers they purchased over a 12-month period, customers bought 2 meatless ones. So it's working. People are literally choosing plant-based versions over meat options 10% of the time, which may seem small, but A, it's only the beginning. And the more restaurants that offer this, it's going to increase. And it's still 2 times more than they would have been doing were these options not available. And reviews are positive. Speaking specifically about the KFC, major news outlets and blog posts by people who actually eat at KFC and other fast food restaurants, they're glowing. People are raving about them. Well, most people, but not the vegans, not some vegans. Not the loudest vegans, not the fundamentalist vegans, the fundamentalists who don't want to support fast food restaurants and think everybody else should feel the same way. The fundamentalists, the purists who don't want their food touching something that touched an animal product and think everyone else should feel the same. The fundamentalists, the purists who eat only whole foods and never anything remotely processed and think everyone else should feel the same and do the same. And this is fundamentalist thinking. I know people don't like that term, and it sounds judgmental. It's not. It's a fact. In The Joyful Vegan, in my book, which I wish every vegan would read, I talk about fundamentalism and how it plays out in certain individuals. Now, it's most often associated with religion, fundamentalism is. But just in general, the definition of fundamentalism, it's characterized by rigid adherence to certain doctrines, ideologies, or principles. It means there's an intolerance for diversity of opinion, and there's a belief in the importance of maintaining in-group and out-group distinctions with an emphasis on purity. So in the chapter on fundamentalism, what I do is I just look at the main features of fundamentalism, just general fundamentalism, and I look at how it rears its ugly head in the context of veganism. And of course it applies here, right? So for example, fundamentalists are intolerant of nuance and diversity of opinion and exile those who don't agree with their perspective. That's just a general definition of what fundamentalists do. That's not a judgment. It's just that's what they do, right? In both religious and secular fundamentalism, those who don't conform are considered heretics in religious context, or traitors, and are silenced, or ostracized, or otherwise punished. In vegan fundamentalism, dialogue is shut down by dismissing perceived dissenters as not being real vegans, banning them from online forums, and even shouting down and silencing speakers at public events, right? Another general definition. Fundamentalists excommunicate, banish, or shun members as punishment for not adhering to doctrine. Different religions practice various forms and severity of excommunication, from completely severing someone's ties to the church to allowing them to partake in some aspects while denying them access to others. Vegans can't kick people out of the club because there is no homogenous club, but they can deny people legitimacy and identity, right? That's the way you banish someone. That's the way you excommunicate someone, right? Vegan fundamentalists, they decry the use of the label vegan for anyone who doesn't tick all the boxes of what they say vegan means. And they call anyone who doesn't submit to their interpretation fake vegans. It may not be a literal excommunication because there is no actual club, but it is a kind of rhetorical excommunication. It's a way of denying someone legitimacy and so on. This is so starkly apparent on social media right now related to the issues we're discussing today, where fundamentalists say that any vegan who goes to KFC and or eats the Beyond Nuggets are not really vegan. So it's not just that they don't want to eat them because they're an evil fast food restaurant, or they're fried in the same oil as the chicken nuggets, or because they're processed and therefore not healthy. It's that vegans who call themselves vegans are not really vegan if they eat at KFC, or if they eat the chicken, or fill in the blank. I mean, I wrote this book long before this particular example, so this is just one example. I mean, this is a human phenomenon, this idea, right, of fundamentalism, but it's just one example in our long vegan story. It's a classic example of what Sigmund Freud called the narcissism of minor differences, or what social psychologists call categorization threat or distinctiveness threat, when groups too similar to our own threaten the special identity of our group. And this, I think, explains why people who self-identify as ethical vegans spend so much time criticizing people who stop eating animals for health reasons. It may also explain why people who self-identify as health food vegans or plant-based spend so much time criticizing people they consider junk food vegans, right? These groups share so much. And while they may have different underlying goals, ethics for one, health for the other, and that's even being kind of extreme because I think we all care about all different things. We don't just care about one, but we have maybe slightly different underlying goals, like the reason we're not eating animal products, but it's actually our commonalities, our choice to not eat meat, dairy, and egg, for whatever it is, that create the tension. It's the commonalities that create the tension. In U.S. politics, Republican in name only, a rhino, is a pejorative applied to elected officials in the Republican Party whose positions are deemed insufficiently conservative. They're Republican in name only, right? They're not really vegan. That's what we do. They're only fake vegans. They're only plant-based. I think we should take a page from the Republicans' playbook. I think we should have vinos. They're vegans in name only. They're not vegan enough, according to the vegan police. Now, I know they don't see themselves in a negative light. Nobody does. I'm sure they see themselves as well-intentioned gatekeepers of the vegan ethic, but that's exactly the problem. The fact that anyone thinks they should be a gatekeeper, or I don't know what, a committee of vegan purity, like a self-appointed member of this committee of vegan purity, right? To what? Personally vet how pure, how perfect, how loyal vegans are to the cause? What? Right? And those who aren't, they shouldn't be excommunicated. They should be banished. They should be shunned. They should just be, they should be called a vino. They should be shamed, right? Or worse. I don't know. Does that sound as disturbing to you as it does to me? It seems to me that this committee of vegan purity wants to determine that vegan options at fast food restaurants, I don't know, shouldn't exist at all because fast food companies are just pure evil and vegans shouldn't support them. And vegan companies like Beyond and Impossible, and I don't know, Miyoko's, Follow Your Heart, name any other vegan company that make only vegan products. Like these are only vegan, only plant-based, no animal products. But I don't know, what? Should they sell only to vegan companies and only to vegans, but only the loyal vegans, only the real vegans, not the vinos? I mean, is the Committee for Vegan Purity against all plant foods being offered to customers at restaurants that also sell animal products or fast food places, right? I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember ever hearing anyone complain or have these discussions that like beans or lettuce or tomatoes or grilled vegetables, any number of plant foods are offered at non-vegan establishments. Like, right? I mean, thank goodness they're there. I would never be able to eat a meal outside the house. But does the Committee of Vegan Purity want to take those away too? Because after all, non-vegan restaurants are making money from us when we patronize their restaurants. I mean, I guess this is a movement, very small movement, within, I've seen, certain individual groups where they not only want to believe, but dictate that vegans shouldn't go to non-vegan restaurants, right? But I guess, like, are they upset that, like, beans are there? Like, is that offensive that lettuce is in a place where there's also animal meat? I mean, the point is, they seem to only get into a real tizzy when vegan companies partner with non-vegan restaurants to sell vegan commercial products, like as if Beyond is impure or disloyal for working with KFC. Like that's a lot of the rhetoric, where Impossible is impure or disloyal for working with Burger King, as if there's a different standard for companies that produce vegan like meats or vegan cheeses, right? Versus companies, I don't know, who just distribute fruits and vegetables. And I've talked about this when I talk about the palm oil in Earth Balance. I think one of the reasons their people get in such a tizzy is because they're low-hanging fruit. And there's a perception that like they're our companies, they're our vegan products, and they must remain untainted. I don't know, there's something around that. Because I don't remember there being demonstrations against Chipotle when Chipotle had like beans, right? Like vegetables, tortillas, because that's what they serve. But when they started selling Hodo tofu plant-based sofritas, and they became successful among non-vegans and profitable for the company, certain groups started demonstrating at Chipotle locations, right? Now, I know Hodo Soy is probably not in the same camp as Beyond or Impossible, but they make tofu, right? And that's the foundation of the Chipotle sofritas. They serve tofu. And that's what the Chipotle sofritas are made of. So I don't know, it was like tofu ours, the word vegan is ours, they shouldn't use plant-based, they shouldn't use vegan, right? They shouldn't be tainted by being served at a non-vegan establishment, especially a fast food establishment. I don't know. One merely wonders. I don't know. As to the notion that vegans shouldn't eat at non-vegan restaurants or fast food restaurants, or that someone isn't vegan because they eat something that has touched an animal product, every individual needs to decide for themselves what their comfort level is. That's not for anyone else to decide. It's patently absurd, it's profoundly ineffective, and of course, it's historically dangerous for anyone to think that they have the right to determine and dictate how people think and act, and the right to condemn those who don't conform to their own standards. Now, there's no danger. I mean, danger. There's no danger when it comes to judgmental fundamentalist vegans. They can't destroy the vegan state because there is no vegan state. There is no vegan club. There is no such thing as a body of vegans sitting on high and determining the rules and regulations of what is vegan and what is not. Thank goodness there is no committee of vegan purity. I mean, they exist. They're self-appointed judges of everyone else. And they've been dubbed the vegan police. But let's just say they're unofficial and they're irrelevant and they're self-appointed. They're not elected. And they only thrive and survive by how much attention they're given. You don't want to go to KFC. You don't want to go to Burger King. Don't go. You don't have to go. No one's forcing you to go. Right? You can have an opinion. You can even share that opinion. Exercise it with respect and intelligence. I mean, we have a joke in our household. You know, we have a joke that if someone's pushing their not very good argued argument, you know, the answer is your opinion is wrong. There is no such thing as a wrong opinion, right? There is such a thing as a well-argued opinion, position, you know, policy, argument, whatever, well argued and well thought out. And I've talked about this in the past about knowing what your opponent's thinking is so that you can reason yours really well. But that's not what's happening. It is literally just like throwing Molotov cocktails. And, you know, I don't pay attention to it. I don't go over to these places. I know there's lots going on. I hear about it from my audience who wants to know what I think about it. Of course, I can get a sense of it when I just see some comments on my page or other people's pages. I think it's shocking. But I don't know. I have a high maybe standard of how we should talk to each other. I just think we should just at least, you know, again, it's not even that they have to be respectful. I think you just have to be like, just make an argument. Just make a good argument. And then have a discussion. I also don't think online is really the best place for it, but okay, we can have this discussion and debate, but that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. What's happening is that there are self-appointed judges and, you know, I mean, look, the truth is if I go over to a forum and someone says a vegan isn't vegan, if they're buying KFC, I literally give it as much weight as if someone said, you're a goose. Like it doesn't mean anything to me because they don't decide what I do and who I am and how I self-identify. So don't even give it any weight. It's literally saying nonsense. And they really do only get attention and they only thrive by the amount of attention they're given. It's literally like giving them helium to blow up that balloon. So there is no vegan rule book. There is no one who can claim authorship of it because there is no vegan rule book. There is no vegan overlord. They're just individuals who are trying to do the right thing, who are trying to make better choices that reflect their ethics, that reflect their values. People trying to be kinder, people trying to be more compassionate, people trying to be healthier. Those are the goals. Veganism is not the goal. Vegan is not a goal to attain. Vegan is not a club to join. Vegan is not a milestone to reach. Vegan is not a badge to wear. Vegan is a means to attaining the goal of not wanting to contribute to violence against animals. Vegan is the means to attaining the goal of being as healthy as we can be. Compassion is the goal. Wellness is the goal. Vegan is how to attain those goals. I don't aspire to be as vegan as I can be. That doesn't even make any sense. There is no vegan standard. There's no vegan position. I don't aspire to be as vegan as I can be. I aspire to be as compassionate as I can be. I aspire to make the most compassionate choices. I aspire to be as healthy as I can be. And I can do that. I can be really compassionate. I can reflect compassion. I can manifest compassion. I can manifest wellness by not eating animal flesh and fluids, by not eating animal-based meat, dairy, and eggs, by not wearing their fur or their skin or their flesh. But that's how I reach that goal. But the goal is to be compassionate. The goal is to be healthy. The goal is not to be vegan. It's the means to the end, not the end itself. Now, you might have thought I had said everything I wanted to say about this, but I've received a lot of comments and questions about this topic, including, did you like the Beyond Fried Chicken at KFC? What did you think of it? And I will address that question and others in a podcast episode of Food for Thought. Until then, for the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.